The light was fading along Haifa Street, and it was almost impossible to spot any Westerners in that seething, poor section of Baghdad. Men in jalabas, long, loose shirts, occupied much of the dirty sidewalks, sitting cross-legged, smoking water pipes, selling small items of jewelry and copper. On one side of the main thoroughfare, dark, narrow streets ran off toward the slow-flowing Tigris River. Tiny car workshops were somehow crammed along there between the cramped, decaying houses. The stifling smell of oil and axle grease mingled with the dark aromas of thick black sweet coffee, incense, charcoal fires, cinnamon, sandalwood, and baking bread. Not many children wore shoes, and the dress was Arab. He should have stood out a mile, wearing a smoothly cut gray western suit as he hurried out from the inner canyon of a green-painted garage. The club tie should have given him away, certainly the highly polished shoes. But he turned around as he walked out, and he embraced the elderly oil-coated mechanic with warmth and affection. And he stared hard into the man's eyes, an unmistakable Arab gesture, the gesture of a Bedouin. No doubt the man was an Arab, and he caused few heads to turn as he headed back west toward Haifa Street, cramming a length of electrical wire into his pocket. He seemed at home there in that crowded, sprawling market, striding past the fruit and vegetable stalls, nodding at the occasional purveyor of spices or the seller of rugs. He held his head high, and the dark, trimmed beard gave him the facial look of an ancient caliph. His name was obscure, foreign-sounding to an Arab. They called him Eilat. But in the circles that knew his trade, he was formally referred to as Eilat One. He made just one more stop at a dingy hardware store 40 yards before the left turn onto the Arar Bridge. When he emerged 10 minutes later, he was carrying a white box with a light bulb pictured on the outside, and a roll of heavy-duty, wide, gray plastic tape, the regular kind that holds United Parcel packages together all over the world. Eilat kept walking fast, sometimes straying off the sidewalk to avoid stragglers. He was thick-set in build, no more than 5 feet 10 inches tall. He crossed the bridge into the Rusafa side of Baghdad and made his way up Rashid Street. In his left jacket pocket there was a small leather box containing Iraq's National Medal of Honor, which had been presented to him personally that morning by the somewhat erratic president of the country. The coveted medal counted, he feared, for little. There had been something in the manner of the president that he had found disturbing. They did not know each other well, but there had been an uneasy distance between them. The president was known for his almost ecstatic greetings to those who had served him faithfully, but there had been no such display of emotion that morning. Eilat One had been greeted as a stranger and had left as a stranger. He had been escorted in by 2 guards and was escorted out by the same men. The president had seemed to avoid eye contact. And now the 44-year-old intelligence agent experienced the same chill that men of his calling have variously felt over the years in most countries in the world. The icy realization that no matter what their achievements, the past had gone. Time had rolled forward. The spy was being sent back out into the cold. Or, put another way, the spy had gone beyond his usefulness to his master. In the case of Eilat One, he might simply have become too important. And there was only one solution for that. Eilat believed they were going to kill him. He further believed they were going to kill him that same night. He guessed there was already a surveillance team watching his little house set in a narrow alley up toward Al-Jamouri Street. He would be wary, and he would be calmly self-controlled. There could be only one possible outcome to any attempted assassination. Still walking swiftly, he reached the great wide-open expanse of Rusata Square. The streetlights were on now, but this square needed no extra illumination. A 50-foot-high portrait of the president was floodlit by more voltage than all the city streetlights put together.